There we go. The second of three series in our new PFA. I did want to give you a kind of big picture overview of what the new PFA will include and what our franchisors are using with their top performer model. As you know, we have discussed this thing called the seven elements or seven dimensions of compatibility and performance. This is what the assessment has been scoring and continues to score and includes two or three new ones that we haven't seen before, and that's why we're sort of going over them right now. So dimension number one or element number one is values and motivations. You guys know that inside and out. Work style is the second. Work and focus style is the second. We covered work style about 3 weeks ago. Today we're going to talk about the focus preference. That's the second dimension or the second element. Core competencies, many of those we already have gone over. The fourth element is social intelligence. We'll cover that at another time. Stages of growth, you guys know inside and out. The sixth one is rules and leadership. We're going to cover that in about 3 weeks. And finally, the risks and resources. That's your fear module that we've covered before. So the new pieces, obviously, are your work and focus preferences, your social intelligence, and the rules and leadership, which we're going to be covering down the road. So that's the big picture. Today we're going to talk about the building blocks of performance. And the number one we're going to talk about is a focus preference. It's also called the attention preference or even concentration style. So you may have heard it that way. Now, again, what we've done is we've taken some science that existed out there. We've massaged it a little bit and qualified it slightly different so it relates to the franchisee, franchisor relationship. So the questions are pointed towards that direction, the scoring is pointed in that direction. So when you think of it in big terms, there's nothing more basic to performance than our ability to focus, our ability to concentrate on relevant things at that point, whether that's dealing with a customer, dealing with an employee, dealing with numbers, whatever it is. We have to have the ability to shift our focus from one part of the business to another part of the business. Now, all of us have a preferred way of working in a business or preferred focus. Some of us prefer the number. Some of us prefer the relationship part. Some of us prefer more the management pieces or strategizing or thinking big picture. The goal, obviously, is for us to be able to move from one style to another style effortlessly. So to be successful, basically, people need to be able to move both width and direction. They need to be able to move from one style of focus to another style of focus and move from one place in their business to another. Typically, this is done naturally unless there's stress involved, and we'll talk about that in just a second. So these are the dimensions within the focus preference or the attention preference or the concentration preference. You'll hear me call it either of those things. Basically, we need to be able to move from big picture to small picture or small picture to big picture, from internal to external. That could be people to task. It could be, again, from seeing a bigger world to a smaller world. But we need to be able to focus both outside of ourselves and inside of ourselves. We're sort of monitoring who we are, what's going on in that business, and we're at the same time able to go outside and observe what our employees are doing, what our clients are doing, and constantly be shifting from one direction to the other direction. I'm going to get more in detail of what each of these is. What we're going to talk about right now is how oftentimes we are dominant in certain areas. The broad external, you'll see this on your PFA, will have a few bullet points that describes that broad external. When we work with our franchisor, we get into a lot of detail over this because it is a pivotal point in the success of their franchisees within their system. For you, you're going to be looking at it as, how do I relate? How do I communicate? How do I help this person through the process? And also, what businesses are most reflective of their natural tendency? In this case, we're talking about someone who is broad or external. This is a kind of focus that people have that are extremely sensitive or aware of their surroundings. So think of someone you might know in your family or a friend or a colleague that when they go into a party or networking event or some kind of situation, they are aware of everything that's going on in that room. They know what people are wearing. They can notice people across the room having a conversation. Maybe it's a little bit tense. Maybe it's a little bit awkward, but they sense something's going on between those two or three or four people that are conversing over there in the corner. So these are folks that are always kind of have their antennas out in any kind of social situation, and so they're always noticing externally, meaning outside of themselves, and broadly what is happening to people, to situations, to their surroundings. So they're extremely sensitive to their customers, they're extremely sensitive to their employees, and they're extremely sensitive to the needs and the emotions of what those folks are going through. These are folks particularly gifted at being able to assess opportunities. So if they're able to go into a room, whether that's a networking event or whatever it is, and intuit or sense what's going on, these folks are able to pick up instantly who's a potential client, who's having difficulty, who's having some challenges, and what can I do as a business owner to get in there and support them and help them and possibly even sell them some products or services. So they're always seeing opportunity no matter what environment they're in. So they're naturally conceptual thinkers, focused on the long-term goals. They're willing to step out and take risks and try new things. Part of the willingness to step out and take risks is they have such a highly attuned sense of others that when they're stepping out, it may look risky to you or I, but to them, their read is so accurate on people and situation that it really doesn't seem that risky to go over and introduce themselves to someone or offer a product or service. They're able to do that with confidence because they can sense that that person's going to be open and receptive to their approach. So they're naturally outgoing, energetic, and personable. What makes them personable is this skill of being sensitive or aware of others. They're not going to say or do things that are inappropriate in any kind of situation. So very gifted, very talented folks. Let's talk about the broad internal. So this is a guy or gal that sees things broadly and in a way that is more big picture oriented, but they're processing more through their internal feelings or through tasks or steps. So it's a strategy that folks use that work really well with solving problems or strategizing. So if you think about it, this is a strategy maybe that a soccer coach or a baseball coach or a football coach might use when he's making adjustments to a game. He takes in data that play worked or didn't work or needed to be executed in a slightly different way, and he adjusts that strategy ever so slightly. The same thing happens with a franchisee. If they're using this kind of strategy, they're typically they're very good at strategizing a very specific kind of goal or objective for a company. They know the right steps or the right processes to get there. Now, most of that processing is done internally or even on paper. It's not always including other folks unless other folks are part of the feedback or data that allows them to take those necessary steps or make those necessary adjustments. So these are folks particularly gifted or talented with complex or theoretical challenges or data or ideas. They crunch those things, they run them in their head, and then they spit out some kind of a plan. A good example of that is our very own Steve Rosen, who's able to take lots of data, lots of information, and run scenarios in a different way and then create some kind of a strategy. Many of you also have that similar kind of strategy. So they're able to put aside those short-term rewards for long-term benefits. So they're good at that delayed gratification. They're even motivated at times when there are setbacks. This allows them to fine-tune their strategies, They're not in any way deterred if things don't work. They keep moving forward and doing what they know is the right thing. Why do they know it's the right thing? Because they calculate it. They run the scenarios. Just like the broad external knows something is the right thing, by being so intuitive or so sensitive to others, they know what the right thing is. The broad internal knows because they've run the scenarios in their head. They've sat down on paper and they've calculated and they've worked it out. So they're very comfortable making difficult decisions and they're very comfortable solving problems. Again, these are risk takers, and they're not afraid to bend the rules. They've run those rules out in their minds. They say, if I follow the rules, this is the way it's going to be. And if I go that direction, this is the way they're going to be. So they've calculated it out in very precise detail, and they know what they're going to do is going to be successful. Let's talk about the narrow internal. The narrow internal focus is the kind of concentration that we use to create a logical set of systems and or procedures. So giving the analogy of sport again, think of the diver on the high dive. So he might use this kind of strategy or this kind of concentration to rehearse his performance in his head. So he's rehearsing every single breath, every single arch of his back or whatever movement he might have, he is seeing it in minute detail. A little different than our broad internal who saw it from a big picture way out there. The narrow internal is seeing a very precise act, in this case, a diving act. So another example of that might be a production worker, a manager that's managing production workers who might see a real precise set of rules or set of steps so someone can get to an outcome in a very precise way, in a very effective way. So these folks are focused on effectiveness and efficiency. What's the best way to take that dive? What's the best way to get that product out or that service out the door in a timely fashion so we're making dollars? What's the best way to execute a plan that they have seen and worked out in minute detail? These are folks that tend to work better independently or one-on-one because of this perfectionistic kind of nature. They tend to do really well perfecting their execution. They do, however, handle feedback well, and they use it as a way to solve a problem or become even more efficient and more effective. These folks are really good at separating, you know what, that's just an opinion, that's just an interpretation, these are the facts. So they're able to separate the good from the bad, the pretty from the ugly very quickly, and there's not a whole lot of emotion attached to it. It's just this is what I need to do. This will make us more efficient, more effective, more productive, and ultimately more profitable. So let's separate these things out and move forward with what we know will perfect the system. These are calculated risk takers, unlike our other two. They're slower. They may be a little bit more reserved in how they do things, are always perfecting, getting more efficiency and more effectiveness. So they may be a little bit slower than the other two to take action or take some risks. Let's talk about the narrow external. The narrow external kind of concentration is used to execute or flat out just get the job done. So this is the kind of concentration maybe a baseball player might use that's either catching a ball or hitting a ball. So the only focus they really have is not on that entire game, but catching that ball. It's one step at a time and doing it extremely well. Now, naturally, a baseball player or a business person can go from a narrow external, okay, what's going on in the game? Now I have to catch this ball or I have to hit this ball, are thinking about the overall strategy or the overall plan, but they're able to narrow their focus just to hitting that ball or just to catching that ball. That's the full job at that point, and so it's about executing doing that the best, then we can move on and deal with the rest of the game. So this is the same kind of focus you and I might have if we're dealing with a single task, drilling a hole, writing a letter, making a phone call, a single task where we have to do it really well. We're not forgetting that this has something to do with the bigger picture or the bigger plan, but we're going to do that. We're going to narrow our focus. We're going to completely focus on that. We're not going to get distracted by noises. We're not going to get distracted by that yammering in our head. We're not going to get distracted by a schedule or by the traffic. We're only going to focus on that task, and we're going to do that task super well. All right. So a narrow external is focusing on achieving a desired outcome, but it's a very precise outcome, and executing that outcome. They're really, really good at intense performance-related short outcomes or goals or projects, just like what we talked about earlier. Maybe it's a sales call. Maybe it's writing the perfect marketing piece. Maybe it's, hitting a baseball, whatever it is, but it's very short. It's very intense, and it's done to perfection. So these are folks who are excellent problem solvers and take a lot of joy in learning from their mistakes. They're saying, wow, that marketing piece didn't work. What could I have done differently? Wow, that sales call didn't go exactly the way I had hoped, and they're good at critiquing themselves and fine-tuning and doing better at it. They are easygoing, diplomatic team players, and part of that is because of their ability to ask for feedback, take the feedback, really not take it too personally, and just move forward. So as I mentioned earlier, everyone is capable of developing these four different styles of concentration, narrow to broad to narrow, internal to external, people to task. They're able to develop these. And all of us have them in various degrees. We, however, have a preferred or more highly developed focus. This comes into play when we're under stress. So we tend to go into our preferred mode and get stuck in that preferred mode and are unable to go from writing that marketing piece and making that phone call, that sales call, to doing a presentation, to following up on that presentation, to going to a networking meeting. Some of us have difficulty moving from one thing to another, so we get really good at one and not so good at some of the others. So our preferred focus preference is basically a neurological makeup that we have, and trust me, you don't want me to get into hormones and neurotransmitters in this discussion, but it really is a neurological makeup that we have that has us prefer whether we're going to focus on broad or narrow or people or task or internal or external is a neurological makeup. It also has something to do with just our overall training or educational and occupational backgrounds. Let me give you a couple of examples of what I mean by that. A CEO, for instance, we typically know them to be strategic thinkers. These are broad internal types of folks. They're able to see the big picture, but then they go inside of themselves and they run strategy. They run processes, and they're thinking outcomes as it relates to that. So they're not getting a ton of external stuff in the way. All they're looking for is, give me the data, let me see what's going on in the real big world out there, and then I'm going to run some strategies on paper and in my head, and I'm going to come back with some kind of a decision. So when we look at focus preference testing, we will regularly recognize that a CEO or someone that's setting the strategy for a company is usually someone who's broad and internal. It's not universal, but definitely a dominant pattern that seems to happen. On the other hand, if we compare our engineer to our CEO, their ability to really narrow their focus on a single task, go in there, problem solve, take in data, and be able to resolve issues or fix things. Someone that's highly technical or engineer-like will tend to be more narrow in their focus, often narrow and internal, sometimes narrow and external. But either way, their focus is narrow compared to broad, and in both cases, successful because they've learned to use that particular gift or that particular talent. So under conditions where things are normal, okay, let's call it the zone. We've all had that zone where we've done a seminar, we've done a workshop, we've done a consult, we're on the phone, and boom, we're just in that zone, right? Things are just enough tension, just enough pressure, just enough performance anxiety that we're actually alert, we're doing a great job, but we're also semi-relaxed, okay? So there's just enough tension both directions. Tension that says, I gotta get this sale, or I gotta get this person to the next step. And another part of us that says, I'm confident, I'm capable, I've done this before, that I can relax, I can listen, I can go through that process. So under normal conditions, people will move from one to another, from internal to external, from broad to narrow, from focused to aware, from aware to strategic, from strategic to systematic, as effortlessly as you would brush your teeth. There really are no issues until we get out of our comfort zone. We're doing something that we don't have a lot of experience in, or we don't have a lot of confidence in, or we have a timeline on and we're being pushed with that timeline, or we don't feel in control. Then things begin to go, let's use the word cattywampus, if that really is a word. So think of it this way. If all of a sudden the tension gets a little bit higher than normal, someone who normally is, let me change the slide here, somebody who's normally able to move from area to area will choose their dominant mode of getting things done. In this case, let's assume their dominant mode is aware. So that would be broad and external. So this is someone that typically is very sensitive to others. This is someone who's typically very aware of his or her surroundings. This is someone typically able to pick up on other people's feelings, emotions, needs, wants, buying signals, let's say. But all of a sudden, there's the tension is there. Let's say it's a sales experience or a seminar or an environment they haven't been in. Maybe it's with people that are outside of their social economic status. All of a sudden, what happens is that tension builds and they'll get distracted. They'll get distracted in some way. And maybe they notice someone across the room, or they get distracted with the taste of the food, or whatever it is. Instead of being naturally aware and sensitive to that individual they're speaking to or a group of individuals they're with, they get distracted by very petty things. Now, that could be whether they're bored or whether there's just too much tension, meaning I'm out of my league here, I got a timeline, I need to be somewhere else, or I'm not feeling confident in this situation, they'll become extremely distracted. So by our very nature, when that happens, our focus begins to narrow, and we realize, uh-oh, I'm not paying attention, uh-oh, that person walked away, uh-oh, that person didn't move to the next step of my sales process, what did I miss? We become alerted to that, and we begin to narrow our focus. Now, assuming for a second that aware is our natural, or broad external, is our natural way of operating, in a matter of minutes or hours or even maybe a day, we will go back to our natural state. We will have evaluated the mistake we made. We will look at the opportunity we missed. We'll go, if only, I shoulda, I coulda, kind of scenarios in our head. And all of a sudden, we're back to our natural us, and we're moving from focus to aware to systems, and back and forth, and we can get back on the phone with that person or ask to have lunch with that person, and we can clean things up and we can move the process forward. Now, this is only true if we have a strong sense of confidence. if we have some self-doubt, oh, my gosh, I missed that opportunity. What was I thinking? Boy, did I put my foot in my mouth. Whatever happens at that point will take us a different direction. I'm going to show that to you in just a moment. But if, on the other hand, we have a strong sense of confidence, or a franchisee has a strong sense of confidence, they made a mistake, they got distracted, they operated in a way that isn't normally who they are, then within a matter of minutes or days, they can go back to being who they are if they have a strong sense of confidence. Now, what this assessment tool does is it measures these indicators, including confidence. How quick will this person go back to running his or her business? Or will they stay in that mistake and not be able to recoup? So let's assume for a second that they don't have that confidence, that they're not able to recoup. The field of focus will narrow no matter what. It'll either narrow and bring us back on course, or it'll narrow and overcorrect. So we went from being just aware and sensitive to other people, confident and capable of talking to anyone, to distracted because there either wasn't enough feedback or it was boring there, or we got distracted because we were intimidated, or for whatever reason we got distracted and we weren't able to truly listen or truly be in that conversation. If we're unable to correct, the person that's typically aware who's now gone distracted will become angry, angry at others, angry at themselves. They'll become anxious. They'll start to have some self-doubt. This is not a good place for our focus to be on whose fault was it that I got distracted, or I didn't want to work with that person anyway, nor do we want to go into a self-doubt place that says, what am I thinking? I can't work with that kind of person. You know, they're way out of my league. I need to back up. Maybe I'm not so good at this particular job. Now, many of you have heard me tell the story of internal versus external, where I tell the story about a seminar that I did back in New York many, many years ago, and I got some feedback on a survey that told me I used too big of words. And I focused on that survey that said I used too big of words, and not the other 82 surveys that said, you know, the seminar went great, I learned a lot. I focused on that piece of information that said you used too big of words. And my natural tendency is to be an aware, very sensitive to my environment, very sensitive to people, a feeling of I can almost read people. But that single event took me into a distracted mode, and I went straight into self-doubt. I got to give up my career. What am I thinking? I'm not an instructor, and I was ready to give it up. That was an overcorrection of a natural gift. My natural gift is aware. I went into distracted. I must have missed something, and that I instantly went into anxiety, fear, self-doubt. Your franchisee is going to do the same thing. You're going to do the same thing. So the goal, obviously, is for folks to operate within this realm where they're constantly moving. So the assessment tool, what it measures is what is your natural tendency? Where do you go when there's tension or when things are too relaxed? Where do you go? So it measures in your natural place, where are you? And under tension and under too much boredom, where do you go? It also measures, will you become anxious and worried, or will you become frustrated and angry? How will you behave in this environment, and how will that affect your relationship with your clients, your relationship with yourself, and your relationship with your employees? So, as I mentioned, we get much more in-depth with our franchisors, but we felt it very important to share some of this with you, not only for your personal get better at what you're doing, but to also be aware that when you're dealing with a franchisee there in your consult on the phone, when they're under pressure, when they're stressed, when they're out of their comfort zone, they're going to act in silly ways. Someone who's naturally aware or naturally strategic will all of a sudden become angry or anxious or fearful. Someone who's naturally focused, you know, will go into a completely different mode. They will go into distracted, or they'll go into overloaded. This isn't the right time for me. I don't know what to do. This is too much information. Folks that are more strategic will become overloaded and then become angry and anxious. Folks that are more systematic will initially just get fearful and anxious. They'll shut down. I can't take in any more information. I can't talk to one more franchisor, and they'll get distracted. Family matters, financial matters, home matters. All of a sudden, things get in the way, and they can't move forward. So if you can look at that assessment and you can say, wow, this person is naturally a focused person, but under too much pressure can become angry and start blaming others. Or if it's gone on too long, all of a sudden they get distracted. They don't have time for you. Not sure the budget is there for them to be able to do those things. So our goal in our process as Friend Matters is to keep people in the zone. Not too much stress and not too lax. If it gets too lax, they get too bored, they will go into a mode that shuts them down. So we want just enough tension that they're in a zone where they can take in information, they can do their due diligence without going into anger or fear or sense of overload or get distracted. We want them with just the right amount of tension, I guess is the word. And those of you that are in sport, you can relate to that. Those of you that have had, you know, a seminar or a sit-down consult, you know when you're in that zone, right? You know when there's just enough challenge, just enough tension that you're on your toes and you're doing your best, and yet it's combined with just enough confidence and just enough historical history that says I can do this, that you can relax and do it in a way that gets the job done and gets the result. We want our franchisee to feel that also, to feel that confidence, but just enough to stay on their toes. So how do we know when someone's going to become angry or frustrated? It always happens, obviously, when they perceive a mistake or when they perceive that they're going the wrong direction or that they might make a mistake. So their focus begins to narrow. It is dependent on four indicators. So you're going to want to look for this. The four indicators that will either have them go into fear, anxiety, worry, or into frustration, overwhelm, I can't do this, forget it, I don't have what it takes, anger, or even getting frustrated at you. There's only four things that causes them to go one direction or the other. And that has to do with, are they slow or fast to decisions? Are they used to making decisions super fast? This is a decisive individual. If they're a decisive individual, then they're going to go into anger and frustration if we're not moving as fast as we want, as they want to be moved along the process. If they're highly competitive and they're not getting just that right amount of tension, whether it's a concept that you've chosen for them or acknowledging this competitiveness or having them see there's the ability to be competitive in the marketplace. If they're highly competitive and we're showing them a concept that doesn't indulge that, or we're creating a process that doesn't indulge that, they're going to get frustrated. They're going to get distracted. They're going to get slightly bored. They need more tension. They need that pace to be picked up and the competition to be there, whether that's somebody else is interested in this territory or whatever it is. It's also going to depend on how much need for control they have. If they're an individual that's a control freak, and you've had those folks in your office, right? They're control freaks. They want to know that they're in control of this process. So if there's no sense of control, you're kind of willy-nilly, right? You don't have a process to take them through, and they don't feel in control, nor are you listening to what they need to be in control. Again, they're going to get angry. They're going to get frustrated. These are not folks that are going to be happy with our process. And most importantly, whether they become angry or frustrated has to do with their degree of self-esteem. The higher the self-esteem, the more they demand respect and the more they demand to be treated in a particular way. And if not, then they're going to get angry and frustrated. Let's look at the opposite, kind of below the line stuff right here, though. folks that are naturally more slower to decision, less competitive, don't have as much need to be in control and measure on our scale, our focus scale, with a little bit less self-esteem. These are folks through our process that are going to get worried, they're going to get fearful, they're going to get anxious. We are going to trigger by not having just the right tension and just the right amount of relaxation for them, we are going to trigger fear, worry, and anxiety. So we need to know, how quick do they make decisions? How competitive are they? How much need for control do they have? And where are they on that scale of self-esteem where they can recoup if necessary? And if we're not following a process precisely, they can still move forward. So let's look at it from a control issue. Let's assume we have a control freak, someone that has high need for control. Again, we've all had these kind of folks in our offices and sit down, or we've worked with them, right? Or our husbands or our wives or our friends are these control freaks. The higher the need for control, when a mistake happens or when there's a perceived, oh, my gosh, I could make a mistake, I might go the wrong directions or make a wrong decision here, then the concentration narrows. And someone who's a high need for control will then begin to force the issue. They will push it. They will begin to become angry and frustrated, and they'll use that frustration and they'll use that anger to sort of dictate, dominate, and force a particular outcome, whether that's with their employees or even with you. If they're not feeling enough control and they need to be in control, they naturally will narrow their focus and become domineering and force and push you, the franchisor, and others. Once they're in their business, of course, that will be with their employees and with their customers. So we want, again, to keep just the right amount of zone, enough tension and enough comfort at the same time. Let's look at just the opposite example. Someone who's really much more amiable, is comfortable with not as much of a structure or needing to be in control. When they're feeling uncomfortable, when there's not enough tension and there's not enough relaxation or confidence, these folks will go into fear, worry, chatter in their head, do I have what it takes, and self-doubt. So these are folks that will confront the issue. They won't tell you, gee, I need a little more structure. I need a little more system. I need to feel that you got it going on because I'm not someone that needs a lot of control. They're not going to tell you what's going on for them. So they're going to avoid confronting what's going on with you, with the franchisor, if the franchisor isn't in control, or with their employees or clients once they're in the business. So they'll run a business where they're much more lackadaisical or unwilling to confront or deal with issues, and instead will stay in their head and go, what else can I worry about? What else can I be fearful about? And just chatter in their head. So frequently they will not provide the direction either to you to help them make that decision or to the franchisor to help them make that decision. Once in their business, of course, they're not going to provide the direction or the control that an employee needs to know how to get that job done, how to do it well, et cetera. If they're in sales or in a place where they have to provide a service, these are folks that may not provide clear direction for their customers. In any case, whatever is going on, if that tension is not there, whether it's anger or frustration or worry or doubt, either way, if someone goes into one of those modes due to a lack of just the right amount of tension, it focuses someone's attention more narrowly. And then they basically begin to miss information, whether it's information they could get from the big picture or other people or outside of themselves, or they're going to miss information inside that says, I don't feel safe, I don't feel comfortable, oh, here's some feedback that lets me know the right direction. So they're unable to read information from outside of themselves or from inside of themselves, and we need both. We need to know, and Blair has reminded me this of many, many times, that we need to have that, am I scared yet? What's my internal feeling? What do I feel about this intuitively? But we also need to see and hear the data from outside. We need both of those. So if someone is going into any one of these quadrants exclusively, they're missing half of that data. They're either missing the external data or they're missing that internal data that says, right on, I'm going the right direction. Just how destructive that mistake is or staying in that dominant place will depend on how important that situation is. So let's go back to a couple of our examples. If you are playing for match point at Wimbledon, that's a very different kind of thing than if it's simply, gee, I wanted to meet that person from across the room. That's a different kind of weight to a mistake of I missed something. I missed that ball, or I missed an opportunity to meet someone. Or it could be a manager is so stuck in his worry and his anxiety that he's unable, because he's shut down, he's unable to hear a complaint from an employee or hear some feedback from his wife or hear some feedback in those P&L statements that he's seen a dozen times, but this time, because he's into anxiety and worry, he isn't able to react quickly enough and make a good decision, maybe even save a deal. So what these assessments do, and or this portion of the assessment, it predicts performance. If we can measure what's your need for control, what's your level of self-esteem, how quick are you to decisions? If we can measure some of those indicators and we can look at what the natural direction someone's going to go in, we can predict where they're going to make mistakes. We're going to predict how they're going to operate once they're in that business. So it gives us an indicator, especially if we can look at lots of folks within a particular system, and see a pattern. There's a direct pattern that comes out in the top performer particularly that lets us know an individual needs to move from, you know, broad to small or small to broad and vice versa at any given moment with a client. And here's how they need to operate with employees, et cetera. So it gives us a pattern that lets us know here's how this person's going to respond. And once in that business, how they're going to respond when given employees, when given customers, when given financial responsibility, when given stress, how are they going to react? So the same logic applies in any situation as it relates to being out of the zone. We become stressed when we're doing something unfamiliar or we don't have what it takes to get there, whether it's information, whether it's tools or resources, it increases the stress level. Or we've done it so much that we're falling off a log, we can get too lax and not do it well. And we've had those times too. So people who are more introverted, for instance, are more likely to be stressed when they have to initiate contact with others. So we know that these are folks that may feel uncomfortable in situations where they have to go out and aggressively, competitively garner sales or relationships. Or individuals that are more, let's say, verbal or extroverted or like to talk might be very stressed when they're in situations where they're not permitted to do that. So we want to make sure that we put them in an environment, especially long-term, that takes advantage of what they're naturally gifted side of them is. So what makes this portion of the assessment so useful is the fact that the concentration styles or focus preferences and the interpersonal abilities measures are so directly related to performance. There's a direct cause effect between someone's ability to shift, the mistakes we can anticipate, and the performance long-term. So in summary, and then I'm going to open up, I want to make sure we have plenty of time for conversations. Think of it this way. There are certain concentration skills and interpersonal characteristics that are important to performance, including confidence, including need to control, including how quick someone is to decision, and some others. Those are just a few of the measures that we're looking at. And we want to know, what do they go big to small, broad to external? What are they doing? This will let us know and predict how they're going to work within a particular environment. So those characteristics in us that are more highly developed become more trait-like when our emotional arousal level gets outside of the optimal range. Our goal as Friend Matters is to keep folks in that optimal range so they can make good decisions, so they can get information from outside as well as internally, so they can go big picture as well as little picture, and they can process without triggering those emotions of fear, anxiety, doubt, anger, frustration, boredom. We don't want them there. We want them with just the right amount of tension. With arousal outside of those optimal levels, we lose our ability to flex and move from one quadrant to another, and we become controlled by a dominant characteristics, becoming angry, becoming frustrated, or whatever. So we'll cover, obviously, this in more detail. This is our first round with this, but I wanted to share it in big picture form for you. Let me open up to questions. I think, Karen, you said it was star 7 to open up our controls. What questions do you have regarding focus preference? Anybody? I have everybody muted still, Karen.
I know. I hate to unmute everybody in case they don't want to be. *7 to unmute if you have a question. Anybody? Anybody having problems unmuting? Okay, I guess nobody has any questions.
Thanks, Karen. Guys, my email is rebecca@provenmatch.com. I think what's going to start happening for you, we still have not used these assessments. Todd and Ravi are still working on the front-end customization of FriendNet. So I think what will start happening is you'll have tons of questions and comments and feedback as the weeks and months go on. You're not at this point seeing this part of the assessment. So as soon as you start seeing it, using it, applying it, hopefully you can go back, and Karen was generous enough to record this for us, go back and listen to this, or call me, email me, and say, Rebecca, I got someone who's, you know, a narrow internal. I'm a broad external. I'm showing him this business. He's going into a kind of a panic. What's the best thing for me to do? So I believe as you begin to use this, it'll be the questions will pop up, and you'll have some stories to tell. And most importantly, it'll make you more efficient in keeping just that right amount of emotional arousal with your client day-to-day, so they can make some intelligent choices and decisions. Thanks, Karen.
Okay, thank you, everybody. This will be on Frugal, and I'll email it out this afternoon. Bye.
Bye. Take care.
Thank you. Please stand by.